in Palestine with Sharif Fahm. Hello, Sharif.
Hello, Stan. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly half-hour segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We start, as usual, with some event announcements for the coming week. All events are free and open to the public. It is going to be a busy week, so you might want to take notes. Tomorrow, Monday, March 13th, will be a reading at 3 p.m. of Betty Shamia's latest play entitled The Black-Eyed at the American Repertory Theatre, located at 64 Brattle Street in Cambridge near Harvard Square. Running time of the play is 85 minutes. Betty Shamia is a Palestinian-American playwright and performer whose play Roar was the first play about Palestinians to premiere off Broadway. She is currently a playwriting fellow at the Radcliffe Institute. The Black-Eyed is a story of four Arab women from across the ages who meet in the afterlife. As these women, who include the biblical Delilah and a secular modern Arab American, struggle to come to terms with their lives and their choices, their stories unfold into a shockingly funny play, which skewers traditional views on sex, family, and terrorism. Also tomorrow, Harvard's Palestine Solidarity Committee will host a panel discussion of Nonviolent Resistance in Palestine, The Untold Story. Participating organizations at this discussion are the International Solidarity Movement, Birthright Unplugged, and the International Women's Peace Service. Speakers will include leading Jewish and Palestinian American grassroots activists and founders of groundbreaking resistance organizations in occupied Palestine, including Dunya Alwan, Huwaid Arraf, Hannah Mermerstein, and Adam Shapiro. The event will take place at 7 p.m. at the Wiener Auditorium of the Kennedy School of Government on the ground floor of the Taubman Building. On Tuesday, March 14th, the MIT Emil Bustani Middle East Seminar, with sponsorship from the MIT Center for International Studies, will present a talk on how were the Arab peoples betrayed. Findings of the UNDP, that's the United Nations Development Program, Arab Human Development Reports, by Dr. Rima Khalaf Hunedi, United Nations Assistant Secretary General and Director of the UNDP Regional Bureau for Arab States. The event will take place from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. in Building E51-095, that's Building E51-095, located at 70 Memorial Drive in Cambridge. On Wednesday, March 15th, Huneda Ghanim, postdoctoral fellow at Harvard Center for Middle Eastern Studies and postdoctoral fellow at the Hebrew University's Department of Sociology and Anthropology, will give a talk on the role of Palestinian poets in Israel from 1948 to 1967. The event will take place from 12 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Harvard Center for Middle Eastern Studies, 1430 Massachusetts Avenue, 4th floor, seminar room. Also on Wednesday, March 15th, the Harvard Students for Israel, the Kennedy School Jewish Student Caucus, and the Harvard Law School Alliance for Israel, in collaboration with the David Project, will present a talk on Understanding the Arab-Israeli Conflict by Professor Tal Ben-Shahar at 7 p.m. in Sever Hall, room 113. On Thursday, March 16th, the MIT Arab Student Organization and Palestine at MIT, with co-sponsorship from the American Diaspora Alliance for Israeli-Palestinian Peace, will present a talk on the prospects for peace following the January 2006 elections in Palestine by Dr. Gabi Baramki, former acting president of Birzeit University, vice president of the Council for Higher Education, vice president of the Council for Scientific Research, and special consultant to the Ministry of Higher Education in Ramallah, Palestine. The event will take place at 4 p.m. at MIT, Building 4, Room 231. Also on Thursday, March 16th, Harvard Center for Middle Eastern Studies will present an ad hoc lecture on the Poem of the Cloak, a 13th century spiritual ode of love to the Prophet Muhammad by Hamzi Yusuf Hansen, director of the Zaytuna Institute in Hayward, California. with co-sponsorships by the Department of Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations and the Harvard Divinity School, the event will take place from 4 to 5:15 p.m. at Harvard Hall, room 104. And also on Thursday, March 16th, which marks the third anniversary of Rachel Corrie's untimely death in 2003, a memorial program honoring Rachel will be held at the First Parish in Cambridge in Harvard Square. The program will be held from 7 to 9 p.m. in the Parish House at 3 Church Street and will feature a taped interview with Rachel Corrie, followed by a presentation of the British documentary The Killing Zone. The documentary shows live footage of events in Gaza in 2003. After the presentations, a vigil will be held in Harvard Square. The program is sponsored by the Greater Boston Chapter of Unitarian Universalists for Justice in the Middle East, Boston to Palestine, the Boston Coalition for Palestinian Rights, Jewish Women for Justice in Israel-Palestine, and United with Justice and Peace. On Friday, March 17th, the School of the Museum of Fine Arts Boston will present a colloquium on Islam and contemporary art at 10:30 a.m. at the Remus Auditorium, located at 465 Huntington Avenue in Boston. The event will feature artist Shanan Al-Ani of Iraq and London, artist Kanaan Senol of Turkey, Fereshte Daftari, assistant curator in the Department of Painting at the Museum of Modern Art, and Nasser Abbad Aga Khan, professor of Islamic architecture at MIT. The colloquium has been coordinated by museum faculty member Mary Ellen Strom and Ganit Ankori of the Women's Studies Program in Religion Program at the Harvard Divinity School. This colloquium has been made possible in part by the Islamic Words Arts Initiative, administered by the Lower Manhattan Cultural Council. And on Saturday, March 18th, there will be a peaceful protest against Caterpillar outside the offices of Milton Cat, New England's largest distributor of Caterpillar equipment in Milford, Mass., approximately a 45-minute drive from Boston. The schedule is as follows. Meet at 9 a.m. in the parking lot of the Harvest Co-op in Central Square. Please bring your car to make sure everyone else has a ride. At 9:30 a.m., carpool to Milford, Mass., followed by a protest from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. For further information on this peaceful demonstration and news articles and images of the CAT protest in 2005, please visit www.bootcat.org. And lastly, on Sunday, March 19th, the Clarendon Hill Presbyterian Church and Temple B'nai B'rith in Somerville will hold a peace vigil from 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. in Davis Square, Somerville. All are welcome to join and make peace flags at tables set up in Davis Square. That is Sunday, March 19th in Davis Square, 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. And that completes our announcements for this week. Former presidential candidate Patrick Buchanan once declared during his 2000 campaign that Congress is Israeli-occupied territory. Nowhere is that clearer than the current effort to pass a proposed Palestinian Anti-Terrorism Act of 2006 under considerable pressure from AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. That legislation proposed by Republican Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Lehtinen of Florida would end all aid to the Palestinian Authority as well as all aid to Palestinian non-governmental organizations involved in humanitarian works. These actions would deprive about one-third of the West Bank population, or 1 million Palestinians, of their employment income, driving them deeper into poverty and starvation. But that is not all. The act would also cut all official diplomatic ties and reduce United States aid to the United Nations by that portion equal to what it provides to Palestinian human rights agencies. In other words, the United States would, astoundingly, punish the United Nations and thereby all the nations that it serves, which means all of the world's nations, for any humanitarian aid they might give to Palestine. What is most revealing is the list of witnesses scheduled to appear before the House International Relations Committee last Wednesday at 2:30. They include an Israeli brigadier general, a researcher who claims that the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics overcounted Palestinians by 1.3 million people, and a researcher who claims that the European Union is funding a Palestinian Authority war against Israel. The Council for the National Interest, which sent a delegation that included two former ambassadors to serve as international observers at the recent Palestinian elections, offered alternative witnesses, but their request was ignored. One of the proposed witnesses was Ambassador Robert Keeley, former president of the Middle East Institute and chairman of CNI Foundation. Another proposed witness was Eugene Byrd, president of CNI. Mr. Byrne condemned the hearing in advance as grossly biased against the Palestinians and against the government they democratically elected in January's election. Paul Findlay, the founder of CNI and former Republican congressman from Illinois who served 20 years in the House, wrote a letter to Henry Hyde, the chairman of the House International Relations Committee, suggesting alternative witnesses to the announced slate. A copy was sent to Ross Lettinen, chairperson of the subcommittee on the Middle East, who is holding the hearing. She did not respond. Here is another gift from the United States. The Ma'amun Allah Cemetery, which was a primary Muslim cemetery in Jerusalem for centuries, is being dug up as we speak to make way for the building of a $150 million so-called Museum of Tolerance at the initiative and with funding from the Los Angeles-based Simon Wiesenthal Center, which calls the museum the Center for Human Dignity. The cemetery is at least 1,000 years old and is believed to contain the remains of historical figures, including contemporaries of the Prophet Muhammad. Even before Golda Meir issued her now famous declaration in 1967 that, quote, Palestinians do not exist, unquote, the State of Israel has been engaged in a multitude of projects to erase all memory of the prior existence of Palestinians in what is now the State of Israel or in the West Bank. From Ben Gurion's destruction and renaming of Palestinian towns and villages, to the banning of Palestinians from using Israeli-only roads in their own lands in the West Bank, to blocking access to Palestinian towns and villages in the West Bank and confiscating all road signs naming them or pointing to them, and more recently to the assignment of Palestinian-only checkpoints so Israelis won't have to see any Palestinians when they enter the West Bank settlement, continuing to propagate the myth that Palestinians don't exist. The desecration of the ancient Muslim cemetery in Jerusalem is being carried out with the apparently lofty purpose, as the Simon Wiesenthal Center puts it, quote, to seek to promote unity and respect among Jews and between people of all faiths, unquote. A visit to the Wiesenthal Center's website, however, reveals that all of the planned exhibits will be about the Holocaust. No mention is made on the site of any exhibits on Palestinians or on Arabs or on Islam. This project should have been quashed 2 years ago in 2004 when California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and now acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert laid the foundation stone for the museum. The museum is clearly yet another in an endless effort, in an endless flood of undercover operations aimed at delegitimating the Palestinians. One need not speculate about the rage and fury that the Wiesenthal Center would heap upon a similar project were it attempted at the site of a Jewish cemetery, say, in Alexandria, Egypt, where one of the historically largest Jewish communities once lived. That the Simon Wiesenthal Center should be associated with the desecration of the cemetery in Jerusalem in any way, much less its initiator, is shocking in the extreme. The Wiesenthal Center website is www.wiesenthal.com. Its toll-free number is 1-800-900-9036. So, we now have two gifts, compliments of the United States. First, punish and starve the Palestinians for electing a government not to the liking of Mr. Bush, then help obliterate the memory of their existence. Nice going, America. We have another development to report. Yes, there's a lot going on in the United States these days. Some of you may know about the play called My Name is Rachel Corrie, commemorating the life and death of Rachel Corrie, a young 23-year-old woman from Olympia, Washington, who was deliberately run over and killed by an Israeli bulldozer while she was trying to prevent Palestinian pharmacist Dr. Samir Nasrallah's home in Gaza from being demolished. The play, co-edited by Catherine Viner of The Guardian and well-known actor Alan Rickman, had two sold-out runs at the Royal Court Theatre in London and was due to open at the New York Theatre Workshop in New York on March 22nd when the theatre suddenly cancelled the production, or in its words, postponed it indefinitely. In a New York Times article on February 28th, James Nicola, the artistic director of the New York Theatre Workshop, said he decided to postpone the show after polling local Jewish religious and community leaders as to their feelings about the work. On March 6th, the New York Times published a masterful exposition of how to kill a messenger, even if she's already dead, to prevent anyone from hearing her message. Edward Rothstein used his fine scalpel of not-so-subtle innuendos to slice Rachel Corrie and what she stood for, while appearing to be a supportive critic of the role of theatre, as he put it, to offend and test, and at the same time expressing his understanding of the New York Theatre's Workshop's decision to cancel the performance of the play lest it lose its supporters and funders, a thinly veiled threat to anyone who would dare host the play. Yet the heavy-handed arm-twisting of the many in the United States who work on hiding the truth and silencing its voices at any cost has produced a backlash. Many theaters across the country are now competing to host the production of Rachel Corrie's play. To borrow a phrase from Martin Luther King, no lie can live forever. We are very pleased to welcome Ann Petter to our program today. Ann Petter, with her colleague Jen Marlowe and others, responded to the hue and cry around the play and efforts to quash it by launching a remarkable initiative called Rachel's Words, which aims at ensuring that Rachel Corrie's words are heard around the world. She joins us now from her home in New York. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Sharif. Thank you for having me on your show.
Our pleasure. Welcome to This Week in Palestine. Could you bring us up to date on what is happening and tell us more about your remarkable initiative?
Well, first I'll tell you how it came about. I had heard that the play was coming from London to New York, and some friends of mine and I decided that the most appropriate thing to do, expecting some controversy around this play, was to try to have a welcoming event and to invite the whole peace and justice community in New York and have a big event which provided support in advance for this play. And in planning this event, we found out, we were one of the first to find out, that the play had been canceled. By coincidence, a friend of mine was staying with me who was very good friends with the Corries, and I've been working also with one of your Boston friends on media work. So we kind of put the story together and adjusted our initiative and thought the best thing we can do in response to the cancellation of the play is to make sure that Rachel's words are heard anyway.
And thus was born Rachel's words.
That's right.
What has the response been to that initiative?
Overwhelmingly supportive. In fact, it's been incredible. We can hardly keep up with the response, both on a grassroots level and in terms of actors in the community. The theater community is very upset about this. People are coming out of the woodwork to support our initiative. And it's very simple. We're asking two things. One is that on the third anniversary of Rachel's death, March 16th, that people from all over the world read Rachel's emails. The play was crafted from Rachel's diaries from a very young age up until she was an adult and killed in Rafa. And it shows the full person that Rachel Corrie is. She was extraordinary. She was a gifted writer. And she was so much more than what the media has made of her. The play will come to New York, but what we're asking people to do on March 16th is to read her emails, which are public domain and can be found on our website, and discuss them. And this can be done in theaters, this can be done in people's living rooms and homes, invite somebody over to dinner and read them and talk about it. And we've had responses from all over the world, from Abuja, Basra, Brussels, Cairo, Kabul, Jenin, Jerusalem. It goes on and on. And then on the 22nd, the day that the play was supposed to open in New York, we're hosting an event at the historic Riverside Church. You mentioned Martin Luther King earlier in your show.
Yes.
This is a church where he gave his speech, A Time to Break Silence, when he decided to speak out against the Vietnam War. So we're also inviting all you folks in Boston to plan busloads of people and come to New York and join our event. We have had also responses from an incredible lineup of people who plan to participate in the event. We've had confirmations from Maysoon Zaid, the Palestinian comedian, Anthony Arnov, who co-edited Voices of a People's History of America with Howard Zinn, Malachi McCourt. Betty Shamil will be responding by video, Najlan Mariam Saeed, Kathleen Chalfant. People who can't be there are saying, I'll videotape myself and be there virtually. Everyone wants to participate.
What time is the event at the church?
7:30 at Riverside Church on March 22nd.
And where can one get the information, the emails, Rachel? So your website?
We have a website called rachelswords.org.
Mm-hmm.
One word, rachelswords.org. And it's sort of the portal for information because everything keeps happening at a lightning pace and changing and adapting, and we put up a website very quickly and ways for people to communicate with each other. So if you want to find out what's happening in your town, you can go to our website and see what events happening in your town on this day. If you want to find out as we get further confirmations about who will be appearing at our event, that will be on our website. The full text of Rachel's emails that she wrote from Gaza are on the website, as well as a beautiful quote that she wrote when she was 10 years old. And this is interesting because Vanessa Redgrave mentioned this in an interview in Democracy Now, that in silencing Rachel now, not only did we silence the woman who was run over by the bulldozer, but we silenced the 10-year-old girl who spoke out so passionately about what she was seeing in the world.
And does the website also include articles on...
Absolutely. We're keeping the... It's updated daily, and any articles related to the controversy over the play are up on the website. Also, it's interesting because we found many other instances where the arts and theater were silenced if they try to speak out about the taboo topic of Israel and Palestine here in America.
That's quite true everywhere in the United States, practically.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, from the lead-in, we're having a few events here on Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m. at the First Passion Unitarian Universalist in memory of Rachel Corey. We'll be showing a brief interview with Rachel, as well as a British documentary, The Killing Zone. And on Saturday, there will be a peaceful demonstration outside the main offices of Milton Catt. You've mentioned some things that we could be doing here, like meeting in our homes and reading Rachel's emails, coming to the Riverside Church in New York. That's going to be a rather big event.
We think it will be enormous. Every day it gets bigger because the response has been so positive. So I would encourage the people in Boston to attend the events that you just mentioned. I'd like to say particularly that The Killing Zone was filmed at the time that Rachel Corey died. One of the people working on our initiative, it was there at that time. And I would really encourage people to go see this incredible movie. Participate in the events that are happening in Boston and come to New York and come to our event. But additionally, we really want to start a grassroots living room campaign so that if you don't or can't attend any of these events, call a bunch of friends over to your apartment, download the emails from the website and read them and have a discussion, because that's what we so deeply need on this issue, and what's lacking is an open and productive discussion on what's happening in Israel-Palestine.
Yes, every effort is made to hide the truth and silence its voices. And Martin Luther King's speech, Breaking the Silence, is very appropriate.
Exactly.
On your website, do you also give those suggestions that you just made?
Yes, we do, and I want people to keep checking our website often because, as I said, this whole thing happens so quickly, and we're trying to respond in our website as well. So we continue to have new ideas, new information, and there's a lot of stuff we haven't even had time to put up on our website yet mm-hmm. because we've mm-hmm. literally had a worldwide response, mm-hmm. and we're trying to keep up with it and put it up. But if people do plan an event, we ask you to tell us. Anyone, if whether it's in your kitchen or your living room or in a theater or in a public space, write us and tell us at rachelswords.org. And we're setting up the infrastructure on the website so that you'll be able to find any event happening near you worldwide.
I would also like to mention that the U.S. campaign against the Israeli occupation is very much involved in events around the country. And perhaps you could post some of your website activities at the campaign's website, which is endtheoccupation.org, www.endtheoccupation.org. The U.S. campaign makes that information available to all the various groups in the country. It has more than 140 member groups, so I think that may be a useful thing to do.
It is useful, and additionally, they have talked about our initiative and support it. We're not trying, if someone has already planned something for the 16th, we're saying go ahead with your plans, but maybe you can incorporate our initiative into your plans.
Absolutely.
If people are demonstrating against CAT on that day, Caterpillar, maybe they could... Mitchell's words on that day.
Absolutely. Anne, I'd like to thank you so much for being our guest today. It was a